Hello, this is Pema Duro. This is an offering to you in lieu of my visit to Brisbane, which I was not able to do. What I thought I would do as a kind of little offering, because I feel that we've had quite a few postponements, and maybe what we need to do is connect in some other way before we get to connect in the flesh, as it were. I thought I would send a little audio journal, little audio tidbit for you about something that's really important to me. Most of you will know that I've been a Buddhist since I was about 11 years old. In that whole time, I've received quite a lot of teachings and read quite a lot of Dharma and done a little tiny weeny bit of very mediocre practice. And in all that time, there is one particular little piece of wisdom, little statement that I have found to be the most important thing and the core or the heart of my own practice. So I thought I would share that with you in the hope that maybe you will like it or maybe that it will help you in some way. So this little tidbit comes from Dudjom Rinpoche, Jigdral Yeshi Dorji. He was the reincarnation of Dudjom Lingpa, who was an extraordinary visionary and saint. Dudjom Rinpoche himself was quite extraordinary. He wrote a lot of Dharma. He gave a lot of teachings, a lot of empowerments and transmissions, and he also wrote poetry and apparently a couple of novels. Since I was 11, I've been doing this Buddhist thing. For most of that time, I've been practicing in the Dudjom lineage, or kind of a Rime version of the Dudjom lineage, for a short period of time from about 1998 until about 2004. I was practicing mainly in the Payul system. Now I am doing mainly Dudjom again, and that's mainly because the current incarnation of Dudjom Rinpoche has come into being and I've started to feel the weight of his presence in my life again. Okay, so what I want to share with you is a very short statement from Dudjom Rinpoche, which is essentially about what is most important in Dharma, what is the heart of Dharma, what is the core of Dharma. I'll just read it to you now. Only one supreme instruction is necessary, a single antidote that liberates everything. We must acquire a deep conviction regarding the true nature of phenomena. So that's it. It's quite simple and it's quite short. Essentially, what that is about is saying that all of the complex systems that we have in place to achieve what, you know, we might call liberation, or we might call realization or enlightenment, all of those things are meant to be supports in the practice. The main practice, however, is this thing, which is acquiring a deep conviction regarding the true nature of phenomena. So when I read that, I was quite excited because it simplifies things very much. What it means in a very simple way is that we need to, if we wish to be liberated, which I'm assuming that we all do, we all wish to be free of suffering, free of neurosis, free of inhibition, free of delusion or illusion. If we want to be free of that and be sane human beings, happy human beings, unencumbered human beings, uninhibited human beings, we need to focus primarily on understanding the true nature of phenomena. So phenomena, in a Buddhist sense, is divided into, not in actuality divided into, but in theory divided into two kind of domains, the internal domain and the external domain, or what could be called the subjective domain or the objective domain, or what could be called subject or the self, and what could be called object or other. So clearly, the other, the object, contains everything that we experience. So that would be all other beings, the planet we live on, the universe we live in, the wind, the water, the sun, the moon, the stars, trees, lakes, alpine meadows, of course, all other human beings. And it also actually includes our own thoughts, our own feelings, and our own memories. Because in this schema, the subject, the self, or well, we don't really, self is a funny word, but the true nature, let's talk about the true nature then. The true nature, what is internal, is actually something that transcends thought, transcends memory, transcends feelings. So when we talk about understanding the true nature of all phenomena, we're wanting to ascertain what the true nature of all external phenomena are and ascertain the true nature of what we might call ourselves. So to do this is actually quite simple. It just takes a little bit of repetition and a little bit of time. When wanting to ascertain the true nature of phenomena, external phenomena, one simply looks at things and contemplates them and uses a little bit of analysis. So traditionally in Buddhism, we would talk about a chair or a table or a tree. We take something that, you know, everyone has access to and we would have a look at it. So if we take a chair, we can say quite clearly that to our senses there appears to be something there. But when we look at it more deeply, we find that it's actually a conglomeration of parts. So the chair is not the legs, the chair is not the seat, the chair is not the back, the chair is not the wood, the chair is not the nails or the glue. So when we try and find this chair, we actually can't find something that is called chair. And as we go down in stages, so we can't find chair, so then we think, we have a look at whether or not we can find a single part. So can we find the seat? And we quickly find that we can't find that either, because we find that there is, you know, the wood is not the seat, the shape itself is not the seat, because there are other things that are that shape. The glue is not the seat. And if we take it out of the context of the chair, then there's no longer a seat anyway. It's just a piece of wood. So then we can't find seat either. So what we find is that all things are interdependent on all other things and are also all very impermanent and also mainly exist merely in perception, merely in our own definition of things. And in Dhamma, what we would say then is that the chair is empty, that it's empty of inherent existence. So it doesn't exist by itself. It depends on a lot of other things to exist. It only exists temporarily, and it really has no substantial existence. It's something that is labelled by language, by ourselves, as something which isn't really there. So that's, you know, okay in theory. Maybe I haven't explained that very well. There's many, many, many different sort of examples that can be given, and maybe I'll send you some by email. But if we can look at things like trees, the ocean, the sky, buildings, other people, and try and find things, we will find that we can't find things, that all we can find is actually relationships. Interconnectedness, fluidity, dynamism. So that shows us that things are empty, which is the true nature of objects, the true nature of external phenomena. The true nature of these things is that they are empty. Emptiness is their true nature. We can do the same thing with ourselves. For instance, if we look at ourselves, we go, are we our head? Quite clearly, we're not, you know, our head. Are we our arms? No, we're not. Are we our legs? No, we're not. Are we our feet? No, we're not. Are we our thoughts? Actually, no, we're not, because we have times in which we have no thought and we're still here, or what something is still here. So when we look into ourself, we do also find that the self is empty as well. There is no Pema. There is something labelled Pema, which is actually emptiness, process of interdependence, of interconnectedness, of dynamism and fluidity. So when Dhrumshe said that we need to ascertain with conviction the true nature of all phenomena and that would liberate everything, what he's saying is that we need to do these kind of contemplations regularly. We look at tree, we look at chair, we look at car or cat or ourself, and we find that they are empty. We start with external things, trees, fields, chairs, objects, and we ascertain whether or not we can find something there. Now, you have to actually do the contemplation. You can't just kind of go, okay, I know the answer to this question. The question is, actually, there is no chaya. I mean, you need to actually do this for yourself. You need to go through the analysis, okay, where's the chair? So I will send sort of maybe some good examples for you that show you how other people have done this process, contemplated these things. And when you actually come to a point where you actually feel, okay, I cannot find this object, then you'll get a little bit of certainty about the nature of external objects. And then you do a few more objects, and when you get really sort of certain about it, absolutely irrefutably certain, that these things are really only exist as labels, that actually there is this vast, interconnected, dynamic, fluid process, and that actually there are no things there to be found, that all is emptiness. When you really feel that in terms of external phenomena, then you turn that wisdom onto oneself, and then you analyze oneself. Where am I? Who am I? Do I exist in any sense? What is the true nature of this that I call myself? You go through that practice diligently, and when you come to a place where you actually cannot find something called Pema or something called Lucinda or something called Lynette or something called Sharon, or something called Ruby or even something called Sissy or something called Yeshi, then you would feel quite confident then that all external phenomena and all internal phenomena are empty. It's good to actually look at thoughts and things as well and understand that they're very, very empty. Once we understand that thoughts and feelings are empty, they have very little sway over us, cannot lead us in any particular direction that we don't want to go, and they just kind of vanish. When we understand that a feeling is empty, we kind of look at it, very rapidly acknowledge that it's empty, and it just sort of dissipates in itself, which is called self-liberation. No kind of like huge process needs to happen if one has already developed confidence in the emptiness of all things. So this level of emptiness that we're talking about, this impermanence, this interconnectedness, this dynamism, this fluidity, is only sort of the first level of what we talk about when we talk about emptiness. If we look a little deeper, there is something more there, which is traditionally described as ineffable, which means it can't be described. But when one looks sort of deeply into emptiness of objects and emptiness of oneself, one quickly sees that beyond thought, beyond physicality, beyond body, beyond feeling, beyond motion, beyond everything that one looks at, there's still some sort of underlying process, some sort of underlying reality. And when one's has a very deep conviction of emptiness in one's meditation, then one starts to connect with that or feel that or experience that. And that we can call Buddha nature. So feeling is not necessarily a great word, but underlying this first level of emptiness is this deeper level of emptiness, which is Buddha nature, which is the true nature or the fundamental nature of all beings. So Buddha nature is really important to think about and to remember as well, because when one starts to unpack what exists, what doesn't exist, one comes to the place where there's this, it's described traditionally as spacious awareness, this sort of vast, awareness or knowing. It has no actual concrete solidity. It has no actual referent. It doesn't abide anywhere. But yet it's still there, and we can still experience it. We can still feel it. That is one's fundamental nature, one's Buddha nature, which is absolute perfection. So Dudra Rinpoche wanted us to develop conviction into the true nature of things, which is emptiness. And when one does that externally, one looks at the emptiness of objects, and one does that internally, looks at emptiness of oneself. And it's done in the context of this Buddha nature, in the context of there is this complete perfection underlying your being, this beautiful, impervious, you know, beyond ordinary nature. So one sort of does this in a kind of a tripartite way. One first off does a little bit of reading, a little bit of study about what emptiness is, what Buddha nature is. Secondly, one does the contemplations, you know, and looks at things and finds whether or not they're empty for themselves. You find for yourself whether or not something is empty, whether or not what you call yourself is empty. Also, at the same time, you're contemplating the Buddha nature. You're doing a little bit of study about the Buddha nature. You're meditating on your own Buddha nature. You're meditating on the Buddha nature of others. These are all kind of done, you know, consecutively, simultaneously, at, you know, you do a little bit here, a little bit there, and it feeds into your meditation. So if one takes that instruction from Dzogchen Rinpoche as the entire path, then what one would do, which is what I have attempted to do, is to do a little bit of meditation, which is simple meditation, you know, very simple sort of relaxed meditation, and do that fairly routinely, as you know, short periods of time, 5 to 10 minutes a day, or if you can only do 5 to 10 minutes a week, that's okay too. And also one does each day a little bit of reading, a little bit of contemplation, a little bit of thinking about what emptiness means, what Buddha nature means. And slowly, slowly, one comes to a conviction about these things. One comes to feel convinced that all is empty, and one becomes convinced that in truth, in reality, beyond the sort of first layer of emptiness, which is just about things being interconnected and impermanent and fluid, there's this incredible reality of the Buddha nature, or the, you know, fundamental perfect awareness, or fundamental goodness, or profound beauty that sits behind all things, and that is your own nature, your own true nature. Take away all the temporary stuff, one's thoughts, one's feelings, one's memory, one's conditioning, what, you know, the ideas about who one thinks one is, and there is this profound, vast, limitless, impregnable, invincible, incredible reality. Okay, I shall finish there. I hope that this has been somewhat entertaining. I'm offering this as a gift to you. It comes from a friend, a peer, an equal, and it comes by way of an apology for not having been able to make my way into the mandala of the bikinis up north. Okay, I hope that you're all well. I hope that you're all happy. I'll talk to you soon.